From Knockadoole to Ardmore, so much to do and see. Delighted to welcome once again our resident historian to the programme. Mike, you're very, very welcome to come along.
Thanks, Owen. Good morning, indeed, everybody, again.
Thanks for coming. Last week, we touched on the contours and indeed the geographical layout of the riverbed out as far as from the mouth of the river here, Youghal Harbour, right out to Capel Island. And we were talking about the amount of wrecks, and you mentioned the Barron Rocks and so much we say wrecks down through the years that are long since gone. But the most recent wrecks.
Well, there's loads of wrecks. And this is, you know, and like you can look up, and there's great wreck books and all that kind of good stuff. And then we know the survey ship was in, and remember the boat used to be here during the summer times as well. And they go around and they, you know, they'll do all the, they like photograph the bottom as well.
Yes.
And there's some fantastic, they do some fantastic work as well, you know, and great for us as divers as well.
I think I've seen a map. Actually, what they have released, a map of the different wrecks that are around the place.
They do,
little
yeah.
black dots. And but the thing is covered in black dots.
Absolutely.
You know?
And, but even
the whole bay is covered, right over on the south of Ireland, is covered in little dots. They're the wrecks that they've accounted for.
Well, they are. And there's a lot of them. They don't still know where they are, obviously enough, as well. Mm. And again, a lot of these are, you know, we spoke about it last week. They'd be out of our depth. Like, as I said, for us as divers, we recreational divers.
Yes.
We'd be in the 45 metre range, and then the technical divers would go up to probably 100 metres, and then it's the commercial divers then, you know, they dive in bells and all that kind of good stuff as well. Mm. But you know, just to get on even, I suppose, to the wrecks, because we're kind of going to stick with between Ardmore, and I suppose next week we might even do the Knockadoole.
The Knockadoole side, yeah.
But some of the ones that were kind of interesting, like some, you know, I've dived a few of them, but not all of them. But one of them that I kind of said I'd bring up was the SV Teaser. So we'll say sailing vessel SV, you know, they've all SS, SV, steamship is SS. So the SV is the sailing vessel Teaser. This was what they said, a Montrose two-masted schooner, and it ran aground on the 18th of March 1911 at the Corra, Ardmore. Now I think some of the ribs or something like that are still there.
I believe so,
on the beach as well. Mm. But it was carrying a cargo of coal, which was very common back in the days.
Yes.
But what they said was here, Father O'Shea was awarded the Arnoldi Gold Medal. Seemingly, the Ardmore people absolutely went out of their way to try and save, because what happened was it came ashore, and I think the Teaser, they thought they were coming into Youghal Harbour, or they got their harbours mixed up. But we were talking about this.
Of course, navigation was very, very, it was amateurish, for want of a better word.
Well, it would be a lot of it, like we call them coasters. So these would have been coasters, and coasters are just you're following the coast without ever leaving the coast, the whole job of the coast. But what they said was Father O'Shea, I think it was the Ardmore priest, and he organised, we'll say, so this would have been fairly, you know, real bad day, storm, all that.
Yes.
The lads were on the, I think they were holding onto the masts at that stage on the Teaser.
Yes.
Excuse me. And what they did was they organised then for the local Coast Guard as well. And I think Father O'Shea, what he did was he organised for a boat to be put onto a trailer and pulled across the beach.
I believe so,
had to try get guys swimming out with ropes on them. And then finally, when we'll say the Coast Guard did come with the rockets, and I think they kind of failed a bit as well with the rockets as well. I think they were missing it and all that kind of stuff as well. So with the rockets, what they used to do was
a breaches buy kind of thing, wasn't it?
They'd have to use the rocket first, we'll say, to get
a rope across.
And basically it was a tripod with a little small cannon, basically, I suppose. And there was the missile. There was a small rope on it, a very, very small rope, and he used to try and shoot that into the rigging, especially. It was a good old spot to try and get was into the rigging. Mm. So then they'd feed out then the small rope.
Pull a big
crew
rope.
Then
yeah,
would
yeah.
Mm. Keep pulling in the bigger rope, bigger rope, bigger rope, and then the breeches buoy. They'd have a little kind of a seat, which was called the breeches buoy. They were able to tie the rope, we'll say, onto the rigging, and then they all go back and forth, we'll say, with that as well. Great way of doing it. It really was successful. Only snag was, and a bit like a lot of the things back in the early 1900s and all that, nobody was trained, you know, the way, and even CPR and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
They said the amount of people that could have been saved, and even because some of the ships had their own rockets, so they would have had the rockets on it. But even the crew weren't trained how to use it.
Them. Yeah,
do you know the way? So, and this is what they were with all a lot of these wrecks. They were saying, you know, training. You know, this is why it happens so often now as well. Mm. But the just about the teaser, I remember my own father-in-law Paddy, who's telling a story about the teaser when it wrecked. I think the story in Armagh was on the same day that the ship was wrecked. There was a lady in Armagh who had a baby. And forever afterwards, the little baby was always nicknamed was the teaser.
Because
he was born.
Teaser baby, yeah.
Teaser. And it was just, that was his nickname then onwards. Yeah. And, it was just a good story. As I said, it happened in Ardmore Bay. I suppose in one way they're lucky for Ardmore Bay because it's very sandy still as well anyway. So to get in. Now, the second one we're going to talk about here, Noel, is the Nellie Fleming. And it was what I put on here was the Nellie Fleming the first. Because
there was two Nellie Flemings.
Yes. And the very first one again came in, unfortunately, with the teaser into the Curra Strand as well, in Ardmore as well. So the Curra was in, the teaser was in 1911. And then the first Nellie Fleming was 1913.
Yes.
So it came ashore again. But it was a good story again, but the guys from the Ardmore Journal put it into it as well. And it was carrying coal, and the boat was wrecked as well. So the Lloyd agent, and they said the Lloyd agent at the time, because they'd have to get a Lloyd agent to look at the boat.
Yeah, to make the call. Yeah,
you know,
exactly. He'd make the call. Yeah,
absolutely.
To certify that the boat was gone down
and that was it. And who it was Mr. Farrell from Yall. So it would have been
Farrell's Lloyd agent.
Yeah, yeah.
So but it was a funny one then, because what it was the local group came to him, and they said, like, we'd like to buy the Nellie Fleming, the wreck of the Nellie Fleming, because it was full of coal. And then they said that I think it was the Curra Coal Co-op was established. And they said there was coal going to everybody. You know the way the boys bought it, they got it ashore, they got horse and carts and all that kind of stuff as well.
Of course, she was slow to break up, I suppose.
She would have been very slow, because when the tide went out,
you can actually get your donkey and pony cart out there
and fill up the coal and bring it in. And then they reckon it was the first co-op in County Waterford. So fair dues to the
guys. Live it to the Waterford boys.
Live it to the lads. But and then the one we know, the Samson. You know the way the Samson crane. Everybody walks up along the cliff walk there in Ardmore.
And that's a fairly recent wreck, isn't it?
Well, it is 1987 exactly.
87,
it is. But you can see even the 1987 kind of how wrecked it is. You know the way. I think the main crane is after falling down a bit now as well. But what it was the Samson. It left Liverpool on the 9th of, so it was wintertime, in 1987, and it was bound from Malta. So they were bringing, so this, I think they said an engine, it had an engine, sorry, because it had propellers, but it was being towed. You know the way.
Yes,
so
I think most of them are like that. Most of them are actually towed.
Absolutely, and you know, I'd say the engine was used very sparingly on these things, because they're not made really for
traveling
through the water. We'll say at fast speeds.
The engine was mostly, I suppose, for the hydraulic operation of the thing.
I'd say so. What they said was barge. The barge was initially being towed by tugboat. The tow lines parted in near gale, so it was again at gale force winds, and while it was off the Welsh coast on the 11th of December, so that was 11th of December 1987, there was two men on board the barge at the time, and they had to be rescued by an RAF Seeking helicopter. In fairness, they made several attempts to reconnect the tow line and all that, but it just failed. So we'll say the helicopter then took the two lads off. So it was left then at that stage.
Yeah, it was a wreck dead lake.
It was. Mm-hmm. You know the way it is.
Yeah.
Anybody's then at that stage. So it, as we all know, the barge eventually kind of ran aground, I suppose, at Ramshead, Ardmore, where it's still. And that happened on the 12th of December. So the lads were lifted off on the 11th, the day before, and on the 12th, then it arrived over in Ardmore. So it was there was stuff on it. They said dangerous pollutants. These were removed soon after the barge went aground, and the ship's propeller was removed, and it's on display now in Ardmore as well. So if anybody wants to see the ship's propeller, go over to Ardmore as well anyway. And again, just for everybody, these are all from the John Young collection.
Yes.
So again, thanks to everybody.
I think there was a story told actually about the Samson, that there was a local lad over in Ardmore, and he was anxious to get on it, and I think he actually went on it there, and his idea was to, once there was someone on it, to claim it.
I think
for,
so, yeah.
For salvage.
Absolutely.
But I think it was, you know, sort of salvaging something like that was...
Scrap metal, basically. That's all it was, yeah. That's it, and would have been too hard even to try and...
Exactly.
Try and get it as well anyway. So it was, yeah... It was, there's nothing on it, you know, the way, and it, but what it is kind of nowadays, and again, it's like a lot of things, Noel, the flora and the fauna, you know.
Of course, it's an ecosystem now.
It's an ecosystem now, because there's loads of fish around it.
Is there, yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Loads of fish, and there's loads of sea life around it, you know, the way. So, and a lot of seals and all that would be sitting up on top of it as well. So it's lovely to see it, you know, the way. It was always a bit weary because we used to be diving, especially with trainee divers.
Yes.
Because I started off my kind of diving, I suppose, with the Blackwater Diving Recovery Unit. And I did the Paddy course as well down below in Baltimore as well.
Yes.
When I was learning. And but then when you kind of become a little experienced, you have to pass on your knowledge then. So we used to be diving in because it was lovely and shallow, and it was very, because the Samson wreck was actually stopping all the big waves coming in. But you always had that shadow above your head of that bloody crane.
Yeah. And of course, you see the thing. Yeah, that's true. You wouldn't know what trailing cables or anything at all.
Well, you wouldn't mind about the trailing. It's just if it decided...
To go then
this
in there,
is my time.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's just one of these things.
It's that, gone now. It's practically, it'll disintegrate over time, I suppose.
It will. But still, it's still an ecosystem anyway, in fairness to itself anyway. But do you know something, Noel? We're on to, we'd say, it's called the SS Folio.
Yes, tell us about the Folio.
It was a Cunard liner, and I absolutely love it because it's outside off Ramhead and Ardmore. So if you're ever out in Ramhead, and do you know something? There's an easy way of thinking about. We'll say, but it lies in four miles east southeast of Ramhead, and if you could imagine, the bow is facing Cape Lyland, and the stern then is facing the other way. So
yes,
but there's a transit we use. So if you'd know GPS or anything like that. It's very easy to find a wreck. Now, the wreck is in, as I said, I was saying the last week, probably to about 35 metres on average, 36 metres on average of water.
Of water.
But the transits are brilliant because, like, as I said, we all use the transit actually more even than the GPS. So what they said was, now transit...
When you say transit, now explain to them what it is.
If you have 2 pints, so if you can line up 2 pints, now you can't line up the cow and the moving cowman harvester because they move. They have to be fixed pints. So what we do is we do 2 lines, 2 pints in one line, 2 pints in another. And the easy way to say it is, if you're outside in a boat and the transit for the Folio is, if you're looking in the harbour at Walt Raleigh, the Walt Raleigh Hotel, just up the road from us here, and have the Walt Raleigh in line with the water tower. So the water tower is behind you.
Yes.
So once you line up the Walt Raleigh and
the water tower.
And the water tower, in which is in a dead straight line, that's one transit. And then the other transit then is the tower that's on Ramhead with the aerials. You know, on the mountain behind, there's an aerial on the big mountain behind, or the hill behind the Clashmore. You're
Cadden Dav.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The aerial
Cadden Dav, yeah.
Once that is in line as well.
With Ramhead.
The tower and the Ramhead with the aerial and the hill behind. Yeah. And then if you look the opposite way and you can see the Walt Raleigh, in line with the water tower, you're dead straight on.
So we're trying to compute that now, and I'm sure the listeners are trying to compute that in their mind now, and they're roughly drawing lines. So you would tell me so that is roughly, very roughly, off Eastern Point.
Eastern Point.
Yeah, is it Farrow?
No, it's off Ramhead.
A Ramhead?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It really is off Ramhead, if you can imagine the tower in Ramhead is directly in from you then at that stage, but you're out so far that you're looking in Yall Harbour and you can see the Walt Raleigh. Now, you know, some people say, oh, the second window in the Walt Raleigh.
Well, now you're getting into details.
If I can see the Walt Raleigh, I'm happy.
If you could see the Walt Raleigh, not the second window in the Walt Raleigh. But again, I suppose that explains the transient. The actual wreck itself, as I said, the wreck itself was Cunard liner. It went down in 1917, is it?
Well, what it was in the 11th of March 1917, and it was bound, we'll say, from New York. Now, think of it again, World War One. 1917 is World War One. And it was bound for, we'll say, from New York to England. It was heading over, and it, what they said was, this thing was big. You know, this is a Cunard liner.
Yes.
So they had, we'll say, there's a forward hold, a back hold, and then the superstructure where the cabins, and the people used to, they were all in the middle of it, you know, the way. So what it was there was 4,400 tons of cargo. There was trench digging.
It was a cargo, it wasn't a passenger ship. No.
It was a passenger ship, but it was what they used to do was boat, you know, the way they used to do.
Yeah, kind of boat.
A bit like today with our car ferries, I suppose, you know, the way. Yeah. It's the passengers are the least. Yeah, bit of any car ferry. You think you'd be the most important person. The truck driver is the most important person on that.
Yes,
at any time. Because that's where they make their
money. That's where they make the money. So it carried a mixture of passengers and cargo.
Cargo, especially. Oh, yeah. And it was full because, as I said, it was 4,400 tons of it as well.
Yeah.
She was a big ship. So, and it was full of trench digging machinery, shell and general shells, and it was army. Yeah, this is the, going back to the story about the Lusitania, was it carrying arms?
And that's the big question.
It was, you know, 100% it was. And every single ship that came from America was carrying arms.
Of course.
Guarantee it.
Yeah.
Just even about the Lusitania, actually, I was only watching it there again. It was the guys were doing it. He's Dungarvan.
Yes.
And he was good friends with John as well. Mm. And he was saying that there was, like, on the Odd, remember we did the talk about the ship, the Odd? There was Roger Casement's bullets. There was a million bullets on that ship. There was 3 million, three times the amount of bullets on the Lusitania, as well as other stuff, you know the way. So was it carrying arms? Yes, it was. The Germans even advertised that this is...
They put a notice in one of the New York papers and said, look, passengers and that thing are fair game for us.
You're at your risk because this is a warship. You know the way, they have to say it's a warship because if it's carrying arms, it's a warship then at that stage. Mm. But they had to do it. You know the way, this is the only way you could do it, and people were warned that...
That this could happen, that she could get a torpedo on the side.
Absolutely. So... and it was torpedoed, we'll say, with it was a U-boat called U-53, and it was the commandant was a guy called Hans Rose. But what they said was
We're talking about the Cunard liner, is that?
Cunard liner, yeah.
Yeah, she was torpedoed.
She was torpedoed. So what they did was, I said it last time as well, I think, Noel, was they don't like to use their torpedoes as much as possible. So what they'd rather use is their deck guns, because they have loads of shells for their deck guns.
Torpedoes, they can only carry three or four torpedoes, I think it's four,
probably one in the stern as well, five as well. So they don't like to use it, or they'll use one if they can. And this is what they did as well here, because what they said was Hans Rose, the captain, he came up then, once they were torpedoed, he actually surfaced, and then he finally sunk the ship with the deck guns then as well at that stage. So they opened up fire then on the deck guns. But what they said was if you think of the Cunard liner, it actually had its own gun as well on the back of it, on the stern of it. So it had, and if you go to Armor again, look at the anchor or look at the propeller from the Samson, it's there as well, the deck gun there, that was on the, and you know something, Noel, it annoys me because I swim over that thing so many times and I've never seen it until it actually ended up on top of that near the pier in Ardmore. And they said, oh yeah, it was on the back of the, and I went, but I was on the back about 30 times and you never
missed
but
it.
Everything is just mixed, it's hard to believe.
Well, of course, like when you see, as we explained in previous programs there, since that went down, the amount of growth and the amount of algae that would be over that,
like. And it's all everything is kind of the same colour, it's kind of a silty kind of colour as well. But and it was mined, because we spoke about this before as well, Noel, especially during World War One, and the ships went down, what the U-boats used to do is come in and settle down beside them. So if the sonar, the ship was going over, the sonar then would say, that's the folio, that's the wreck of the folio. And then the submarines used to come back up and, you know, the way torpedo away then as well. Yeah. But what they said was she was armed with a 12-pounder, which was kind of usual as well. Yeah. A 12-pounder gun, which is actually, you know, you can go into Armor and see it. It's actually
looking at the storm wall there.
Brilliant. And it's a lovely thing to have there as well.
It is.
The initial explosion, there were 7 crew members lost in the initial explosion. So when the torpedo hit, out of 85 people, so it was, you know, it was, unfortunately it was 7 people, but out of 85 people, the rest of them survived then as well.
They had time to get out the lifeboats.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, would say with the John Young collection, we'll say, and this bit now I got from the Ardmore Journal, and again it was James Quayne as well in his account of the incident. What they said was an interesting letter from the member of the Dr. Foley household in Ardmore. They said all the people took some of the crew to each house, so the Ardmore opened up their doors again,
yes,
as usual.
Yes,
very brilliant people. We had five: three English, one American, and one Dane. Some were without boots, all were without socks, some without coats, and so on. After looking after creature comforts, they were, of course, without food since the night before. They were anxious for music.
Of course, music had to chill up a little bit, I suppose. Yeah.
So we put on the gramophone for them, that's what they said. And they said that they believed that the crowd that went up to the convent were well taken care of. There was a sister, Aloysius, and she played music for them. I think the accordion or the fiddle or whatever it was, and she played. And then they will say they, what they said was the letter writer also says of the attack on the boat, they will say that the survivors, one of the survivors said, when they had taken to the boats, the captain of the submarine, who was very courteous, you know, the way, and it was generally the way it was.
It was. And he said there was a fair amount of seamanship, even though there were opposite sides.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, the rule of the sea was, and kind it was, of superseded
and,
that.
And then what they said was the courteous, and he came up to them. He brought his submarine up to them, and he said that they were all right, and to row to Ardmore, and he showed them the way, and he said you have to go 4.5 miles. And I actually heard another story where he mentioned a pub by name that they'll take care of you. No, I'm not sure.
So they
would have known kind of around the area.
They would. The surprising thing about it, as we all know, it was supposed to be neutral.
Yeah.
Supposed to be neutral waters, we'll say. And, of course, a U-boat was very, very far from home.
Well, absolutely.
And, of course, when you think of it, from a U-boat coming, we say, from Germany or from, we say, the northern ports or whatever the case be, it was just right down to England, down that, you know, beside England and France, down the, we said, you know, and into the harbour here, into south of Ireland.
And we'd say, if you think of a U-boat, mainly the U-boat was on the surface, because obviously the air is up there and everything is up there, and they're using diesel then at that stage.
And of course the batteries that they had only kept on going for maybe an hour at the very most.
Absolutely.
I suppose,
and they had to be recharged.
They had to be recharged from the diesel engine.
So you had to get
and
diesel,
and they were fairly primitive.
And it was
clamped.
Well, it was. I've dived different submarines, and you'd be surprised.
Have you?
Because it was U-260. We were diving. We were searching actually a long time in Cork Harbour for the little mine layer, and we didn't find it. It was found there recently as well, and I dived that as well.
A mine layer.
It's a little mine layer. Yeah, it was a. But it was. It's nearly half the size now at this stage. It's a very small one. But like the most famous, I suppose, of U-boats in Irish waters is a U-260. It's down the Glendore sub near Baltimore, the West Cork then as well.
Yeah.
But these things, like you look at the submarine as it is, but the submarine bit where, you know, it looks very big, but it's like a cylinder, you know the way. So the pressurized cylinder bit is only in the middle. It's a small bit in the middle of it. The rest of all around it, we'll say the diesel tanks, there's air tanks and all that. They're in what we call the superstructure around. It's like a skeleton, you know the way.
Yes.
Where all the bits are outside, we'll say, and you know, as I said, water tanks, all this kind of good stuff as well. But the inside, where the actual pressurised bit is, a very small area.
And is it? Because we have this mental picture of the whole submarine from stern to stem being under pressure.
Yeah,
like
No.
It's just a small bit in the middle.
It's probably a quarter. The actual bit where all the crew are is probably a quarter of the size of the whole submarine. And even the, if you think of it, like we'll say the, you know, you've seen the films, you know, the ship going out of submarine leaving harbour and all that. It didn't go down, because they were like, you could see them walking through different passageways. What they said was, when these guys were heading out, they were stuffed with food, with supplies, with everything, and they used to crawl along the supplies.
Yes.
And especially as the supplies went down there, because they might be out there for 2 months, like, you know the way, and 50 people on board in this tiny cylinder.
Yeah.
And what they used to say was, they never used to close the door in the toilet, because just in case they were depth charged and they didn't want to be stuck the last place. And there's a couple of submariners said that they never closed the door in the toilet.
They're probably right, Joe, I suppose. Yeah.
But even all the and I'll kind of go quickly. I have to say this is my best dive. I love this dive. It's a fantastic dive.
Yes.
And a lot of people come, especially to y'all and Ardmore, just to do this dive as well. The we mainly dive the stern of this boat because in the stern, the aft hold, we'll call it, what's called the aft hold, it's full of shell heads. You know, the bombs.
Yeah, the shell, yeah.
But not the charge. There's no charge in them. But it's like, you know, you'll see in the old black and white films where they open up the breech and the big cannons. These are huge cannons. They shove this huge shell in and then they put in the cordite behind it.
Yes.
And that they set off the explosion. That's these shells. So there's no explosives in them. They're just massive. Some of them are really, really big and then some were kind of smaller as well. I think somebody brought up, when the lads had his new boat, and they brought one up, but it's all this, you know, rustical. It's like an inch. You could stick your finger into it going in an inch because it's full of rust.
Yes.
But they said it ruined his boat because it was just all this gunge kind of came off of when they landed the deck on the deck.
Yes.
It just fell apart, we'll say, you know, mostly. But it'd be great to get some of them kind of up. There's thousands of them down there, absolutely thousands.
Yeah.
And in the front hold, actually, at the time, there was a guy from Dungarvan, and he did very well out of it. And it was full of brass bars, because what they were milling then was the brass bars,
the shells,
to make
course,
the shells at the back of it.
Yeah.
So it was full. And then it's a long ship, so you only have kind of 10-15 minutes down there. So we never really kind of went up. I went up to around the bow two or three times, but all the good stuff is down the stern.
Down the stern of it, yeah.
Because if you look at the midsection, you have a photograph of it there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see the two chimneys. So the boilers are underneath there as well.
Yes.
So that's what that's the high points in it on the ship as well. And it's a lovely, lovely ship. But again, it's been mined. It's been, you know, explosives and everything that put onto it, because to try and flatten it down a small bit as well anyway. So, but it's absolutely the best to dive ever.
Is it though? Yeah.
And it's
absolutely
just
fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
I won't keep you old. We've two small ones here because we're just in our more kind of area now at the moment.
Yes.
There's a second one called the SS the Bandon.
Yes, Bandon. Yeah.
And the steamship Bandon, and it was owned by the Cork Packet Company as well, the City of Cork Packet Company. It was actually sunk only kind of, it was sunk like a month after the Folio. We're just talking about the Folio. Folio, I love this dive. The Bandon, I've never heard anybody saying, I liked that dive or I enjoyed that dive or I'd like to go back and do that dive again. It's probably because there was a lot of people died in it as well, in fairness to it. But it's not a nice dive either. You know the way
not pleasant, yeah.
It's not, you know, it's a very dark one, always. And there's always very, even in good weather, it's like peaty water, because where it is, it's kind of in kind of closer on the other side of Ardmore. So the other, you're heading towards kind of Helvic Head.
Helvic Head, yeah.
But this was
old parish area along that.
And it's just, you know, something, even you'll be filthy after it as well. It's one of these ones where it's like an inch thick of
gunge,
like dirt, silt, all over everything, you know the way. And it's very hard to make it. It's always a very dark dive. It's an eerie dive, you know, one of these ones
where
I did dive. We dived it a few times, and I just didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
One of these places. But just a very quick one about the Bandon. She was shipwrecked on the 13th of April, 1917. Again, it's World War. 2 miles southwest of Minehead, so it's coming towards from Minehead to Ardmore. She was coming that way. It was bound from Liverpool to Cork with 1,050 tons of coal as well, and other general cargo as well. She had a 3-pounder as well on the stern, so the lot of them had the stern guns as well. Now, whether she was mined or whether she was torpedoed, because this is where it gets a bit different places you go to, they'll say she was mined, and then other places just she hit a mine.
Yes.
And but I'd say she was torpedoed anyway, to be honest with you. What it says was the ships immediately began to sink, and the captain immediately returned to the bridge and ordered to head. So she was mined or torpedoed outside. And what they did was, the second she was hit by torpedo, what you want to do is run her aground
as fast as you can.
He knew he was in trouble because it was underneath the waterline. The only way to do it is get close to, and he nearly got in, you know, the way, in fairness to the captain. They were fairly close in, but unfortunately 28 crew died, 4 survived out of this so it was a very sad one as well, you know, the way.
And the sad thing about it was, again, and we've touched on there earlier on, even though we were neutral, you know, And some of the ships, I believe, the Irish government instructed that air should be written on the sides.
That's right. But they were even...
They were even torpedoed.
But even Germany bombed Dublin, if you remember. And they kind of said, oh, we thought it was Liverpool.
These were aviation experts. I think the whole idea was to try and entice Ireland into the war on account of the ports,
if you think of it, like even 1945, Britain still had, I think, Cork Harbour. So Queenstown.
Yes.
There would have been still part of the British control as well at the time. So it was, and that was one of the big things for because Ireland was neutral, we had to have our own prisoner of war. We spoke about this before. There was both Germans, English, and Americans in the same prisoner of war.
Yes, yes.
Up in the Curragh camp.
They all got on great altogether.
They did.
And we fed them.
a lot of the Germans still in Kildare.
They got married and they're
still there because they got married to local girls and they're still there. There's a lot of German people up there. So it was a program on Discovery. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
The last boat, we have just a very quick one.
Rest.
A lot of it would be, and it's not so long ago, I suppose, it was the MVF. Which is motor vessel fishing, fishing vessel, and it was the Fille des Eaux, and it was a French motor trawler, and on the 27th of October 1963, it struck rocks at Ardmore Head as well, and she went down.
Okay, Mike.
Thank you very much.
On that point, we'll end our little discussion today. Absolutely fascinating. And as I always say, still the gaze and still the wonder grow, the one small hill could carry on it new. That's Mike Brooksfield, our resident historian.
Everybody.
Mike, we'll be back again next week with the final part of this series on the day. And we'll be dwelling on shipwrecks around Ballymacorda.
Ballymacorda, Knockadoon. That's exactly, yeah.
Okay. Once again, Mike, thanks for gracing us with your presence.
Thanks, Noel. Thanks, everybody.
We look forward to your contribution again next week.
Thanks a million. Bye now.